This episode of Breaking Brave is brought to you by Crank Coffee, the newest member of the Neal Brothers family. Crank Coffee is a new Canadian whole bean coffee brand that is certified organic and fair trade, founded by the Neal Brothers, Peter and Chris. This brand was influenced by cycling, coffee lovers, and experts. Check it out at the Neal Brothers online shop and use our coupon code BRAVE for 20% off your first Crank Coffee purchase. Enjoy. And I wanted to mention that if you would like to connect with me directly, you can always do so at marilynbarefoot.com or breakingbrave.show. I see and answer every single contact personally, and I would truly love to hear from you. Welcome to Breaking Brave. I'm Marilyn Barefoot, your host. In recognition and celebration of International Women's Day tomorrow, I'll be profiling strong, brave women throughout the month of March, starting with today's guest, Angela Rospis. Angela is a Sydney-based business mentor, author, and self-worth educator with a particular passion for supporting women to step into their next chapter. In this episode, Angela and I discuss how life is not just about being inspired. It's also how you inspire others to see themselves. We also get into a fascinating conversation about identifying the subtle signs of ADHD in women, where hyperactivity is often inside the brain rather than outwardly visible. Please welcome the very brave Angela Rospis. I am so delighted to have another Australian guest joining me on Breaking Brave today. Slowly but surely, although I've never had the pleasure of visiting Australia, I feel like I'm getting to know it one guest at a time. My guest today is Angela Rospis. And Angela, talk to the world and tell us who you are and what you do.
Oh my goodness, I thought your podcast only went for about 40 minutes because that could take years, but I'll start in the middle. Where I am at the moment, what I do for a living is I'm a business strategist and mentor for women who have established service-based businesses, but that feeling of frustration because they realize that there is more untapped potential inside of them and they just need someone to be able to see that standing alongside them and draw it out. I guess I'm called a business renovator because I don't knock down the entire place and rebuild. What we do is we actually go in, assess the foundations, and then do a bit of repainting and repapering and maybe add on a room or two. But it's about really tapping into what's already there because us women are fairly phenomenal and often cannot see that because self-doubt gets in the way. And that's my day job, but I'm also been married for 28 years to a rather lovely chap who's English. I have two bonus boys who are my stepsons who are now 37 and 35 and two of our own kids, our son Cameron who lives interstate who's turns 25 in a week and our daughter just turned 21. She's still at home. So I play golf. I spend a lot of time out in nature. I have the world's cutest dog, maybe slightly biased, but unless you do as well. So lots of things happening in my world. I'm also, I guess, to add a little bit of spice into the mix. I was diagnosed with ADHD at 53, which shocked the pants off me. And then you go through a whole cycle of understanding. And there's lots of other things that are in the back burner, but they are a lot of the things that really define who I am and how I show up in the world.
I can't even imagine that those things are on the back burner because God help us what's on the front burner. Yes, I have two baby golden retrievers and they are the world's cutest dogs. So we'll have to go through that battle at some point in
time. It's a tie.
Let's start there then. ADHD at age 53. I've had some experience with ADHD because my son at age 7 was diagnosed with ADHD. But I know that it presents very differently in women than it does in men. How did it come about that you or somebody decided that this might be worthy of looking into?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a not uncommon experience for women whose kids get diagnosed. And you're very right in saying that it shows up differently in girls than boys. My daughter was actually the one who was diagnosed at 19 or 20. She had had a lot of anxiety, a lot of challenges, a lot of mental health challenges, but no one had ever said, this could be ADHD, because she was such a high achiever at school and did so well. But the question is, at what cost was that in terms of her ability to actually pull those constant rabbits out of the hat? When we finally found someone who suggested that perhaps she should be tested, I was then reading the documentation and going, hang on a minute. And they do say there's a very strong hereditary trend. And usually if a child has ADHD, one of the parents will. It's not my husband. He's the most linear thinking, organized, compartmentalized fellow in the world. I recognized myself in the description. And so I went off and sought a diagnosis. Mine was slightly complicated because you're meant to show evidence of ADHD traits before 7, so they need to look at your school reports, etc. I grew up in New Zealand. I've lived in Australia for many years. Both of my parents have dementia and are in different care homes, so that information was going to be hard to find, but asterisk, we did actually find it when I went back to New Zealand for a visit. But also because in my background is addiction. I've been in the recovery movement now for 18 years, but the doctor was, or the psychiatrist was, concerned that perhaps some of this interesting way that my brain works may have been a remnant or a hangover, excuse the pun, from that type of activity I did when I was younger. So I needed to see an addiction specialist who went, nah, your brain's fine. It's just a bit sparky. And hence I had the diagnosis. 53. I've since discovered there's a cycle that you go through. The first one is surprise, like, oh, seriously? And then there is sadness. Oh my God, why didn't I find this out earlier? You know, it would have made so much of a difference, which I'll explain. And then you go into anger. Why didn't I find this out earlier? Arr, like all this crankiness. Then you move into acceptance. Well, this is the card. It arrived a little late in life, but this is the card. And then you move into adjustment, which is what changes will I make to accommodate and work with this brain difference that I have, as opposed to, you know, sit in the corner and sulk, which never got anyone anywhere.
Exactly.
So that whole cycle. Yeah. So that's the cycle. I was fortunate I chose medication, which works brilliantly for me. The best description I can give is, you know, those little yellow minions from the movies. La 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 la.
Love them.
My brain, unmedicated, is like carrying a whole tribe of them around every day, asking for attention all at the same time. When I take my slow release Vyvanse, they line up in a row and wait their turn. I never knew a brain could be so calm, and the impact that this has had on my life in terms of my very much my business, but also my confidence, my understanding and contextualizing of so many of the challenges that I just thought were part of life. Well, they are, but they're more challenging when you have a brain difference thrown in there, a neurodiversity thrown in there, and appreciation as well for like, so that's why I'm so good at ABC, because it's a choice. You could look at, that's why I screwed up so many things. Yeah, but I'm not going to linger there. I'm going to look on the other side of the coin, which opens doors to new levels of potential. So, yeah, late to the party, but glad I finally got invited.
Wow. I have a million questions, Angela. First, just what do they, the grand we, the doctors, the medical system in Australia do? What do they do to test you for ADHD? Is it, it's not blood work. This is more cognitive.
No, I wish it was as easy as that. It's probably the best description. It's done through questionnaire. It's self-assessment, but also you have some significant other people complete the assessment as well. And then it's a long discussion with a psychiatrist. It's a psychiatrist, not a psychologist, because they, of course, are the only ones who can prescribe medication if that's the path you choose to go down. So it's very much looking, because I detest the expression, and I'll put this right out there, oh, everyone's a little bit ADHD. That's a surface level judgment. It's about the impact that it has on your world. That's what we're looking for. So, for example, when we looked back at my school reports, because I did very well at school, I hadn't looked at the comments, and the comments said things like, must think things through more thoroughly, must take more care in the playground, must realize there are other people in the classroom and not just her, et cetera, because I am what's called combined. So I'm both inattentive and impulsive. Mm. And it's the impulsivity side of things which has very much impacted my world in terms of let's leap first and look later. So I'm very action oriented, and that can be good because I don't procrastinate, but it also has significant drawbacks in terms of not staying the course, changing direction in my business every 12 months. So perhaps that's why the traction that I so craved hadn't been achieved. I've done lots of great things and by many accounts would be seen as successful, but perhaps that's why I relate to that feeling of untapped potential.
Yes.
When you know you've been taking lots of action but not necessarily getting the traction you believe you're capable of, well, it's because my sort of brain is wired for fun and interest and novelty and challenge and competition, and I get bored very easily. And so I go off for another shiny new object or off to a greener pasture. When if I'd paused and dug a little deeper, those rewards were already there, but I just couldn't see them because I was dashing over. It also is incredibly correlated. Untreated, undiagnosed ADHD is extremely correlated with addiction, which explains a lot, which is also aligned with trauma, which is very much part of my younger years. And it's also explains why I had so many social challenges as a kid at school, because I was a bit weird, loud, and unfiltered, which is not the most brilliant of trilogies when you're trying to fit in as everyone wants to as a teenager. So everything, it's the benefit of what I call kindsight. So kindsight I define as compassionate reflection. So looking back and seeing how the pieces fell together and going, okay. And I needed to spend some time in regret and sadness and anger. You can't deny those emotions when you're experiencing them. But the key is not to get stuck there.
Yeah.
And my studies in positive psychology were extremely helpful in getting me out of the pit of doom when I was first, you know, in that stage of the diagnosis reaction cycle, as I call it.
Well, you've opened up so much for me that as I was researching you and as we've been talking just for these few minutes, and I'm honestly not joking around when I say this, I think maybe I might be in the same camp.
Ooh.
And so I think I've got to take one of these questionnaires and see. And so I'll get back to you on that, Angela, because while I was reading about you, I was like, wow, yeah. That's me. Check, check, check. But I'd love to talk a little bit before we go into your business. The relationship between ADHD and addiction, is there some understanding as to why? Is it the thrill-seeker ADHD person that is always looking for the next fun thing? And I'll caveat this by saying, I will be 5 years sober. Hey. And my drug of choice was alcohol. So that too, when you said that, I was like, okay, there's a lot of things lining up here. But why is there documented relation between ADHD and addiction, do you think?
It's complicated. I would love to be able to give you a straight answer, but obviously individuals have different experiences which can predispose them towards self-medication. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that. So when I mentioned my interpretation of trauma, and if we think of GABA MATOR, I think that's how you pronounce his name, there's big T and little T trauma. So I don't have to have seen my family wiped out by a bus to have experienced trauma. So it depends on what temperament the individual is born with. So you could have high sensitivity, high reactivity, low return to baseline, which is, you know, something that happens with my daughter, for example. So I have some of that. It can be one thing I've really noticed is in women in general, and I'm using this a real generalization here, but let's just go with it for a moment. With the women I speak to and work with in business, I've always noticed that self-doubt is a big chunky thing, right? And it holds us back in many, many ways, that relying on the external validation, external feedback, which is why self-leadership is a big piece of what I do these days. But when I started talking to women with ADHD who were running businesses, the self-doubt was off the Richter scale. It was triple, and it was already bad. It was triple in us. And there's a piece that is a part of the neurodiversity in the ADHD camp called RSI. It's a bit debated as to whether or not it exists. I think it does. Rejection, sensitivity, dysphoria. Sorry, RSD. And it is this hyper feeling of taking things very personally because we've got emotional dysregulation, which is a big part of the syndrome as well. Very hot. We can run hot and cold very quickly. And so those feelings of being, and a lack of boundaries happens as well, those feelings of being judged and found wanting are more intense in somebody with neurodiversity. And so there, and because you quite often over the years, it's been documented that the negative feedback that a person with ADHD receives is triple, quadruple what a neurotypical person receives in terms of, why can't you just focus more? Why can't you just get that done? Why can't you? Why can't you? Why can't you? That builds up. And if you add trauma into the mix, then the desire to find something to relieve your pain, whatever is causing that pain, it makes sense. And so if you think about more rejection, more negativity, more sensitivity, more emotional dysregulation, more impulsivity, all of those to me feel like pointers towards, what's your drug of choice to take away the pain? What's your drug of choice to feel as though you fit in? What's your drug of choice to open a doorway to you being able to mask and act normal in a world which demands things of you that don't come as naturally as they do to others? So I'm not a scientist, but you know, I'm a lived experience type gal, and that's some of my theory as to why it happened. And it's hard to break it. It's hard to break it. You know, when I got sober, my drug of choice was the same. You know, 18 years ago, no one was talking about this stuff. There wasn't all of the books and all of the TED Talks and all of the conversations. It was very much shame and guilt and keep it behind closed doors. You know, and that's not exactly good for the self-esteem either, is it?
No, so, no. It's such a shame. It was such a shameful label that people put on themselves, if you will. It's like you shuttle off to your AA meetings or Friends of Bill W. meetings or whatever they're called.
Yep.
And outside of that room, you never talk about it. So
I am so glad that's changed.
Me too.
Because if I'd heard stories, because I thought, you know, someone with a problem with alcohol was, you know, on a park bench in an overcoat with a brown paper bag and probably mail.
Yeah.
And that was no one that I saw. So I thought that I was, you know, here I am in the suburbs, nice car, had my own business, two lovely kids. I'm obviously terminally unique, as they say in the fellowship. And so I was stuck for quite a while. So I took me about 5 years to probably work through that. And then I love the expression, I can't remember where I heard it, but it's to share from your scar, not from your open wound. So once the scar tissue had sort of healed the shame and the guilt, because I was loved back to life by people in those rooms that showed me that I wasn't a bad person who had to get good. I was an unwell person who needed to get well. And so once I accepted that and it had traveled from my head to my heart, then I could share. And to be honest, I don't give a damn if somebody judges me poorly. That's their shit. It's not mine. I will share my story where appropriate, because that can open the door for someone else to walk through. And that's incredibly important, the power of story, for sure.
Absolutely. Thank you, Angela. So we talk about, well, you just mentioned the word story. Feel free to change the names of the people perhaps in your story, but to demonstrate what you do in terms of your business, your consulting practice, if I could call it that, maybe there's a story that comes to mind. I don't mean to put you on the spot, because I find that people retain the information with much more clarity if you put it in the form of a story, because I think that'll just bring to life what you do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's probably a a couple of different ones that I can share. Because the women that I've worked with women for years. I mean, when I first left corporate land and realized that when you have small children, going back to corporate land is not easy. They don't make it easy, even back then. So I did what a lot of women do, which is I looked at the skills that I had and I went, I can turn this into a business. So I started as a freelance marketer. Then over time, that grew and I eventually bought an office, had staff, and we were doing marketing work for clients across three states. But inside, over time, there was this discontent that was building up. I actually wrote a book about this called Your Next Chapter. Ditch your doubt, own your worth, and build the business you really want. And then I took my own medicine, which was recognizing as the discontent builds, you need to look internally and see, okay, so have I built a business by default? As in, I've done all the things that people say I should do and what a business should look like and what makes a business successful. And it is. But blah, inside there's this feeling of like,
you're not loving it in your soul anymore. You're not feeling it anymore.
So not loving it. So it's a combination of these two. Okay. There's that feeling of frustration and feeling of being out of love with your business. Okay. And so the distinction here is that there's no need to reinvent. Okay. This is about recalibration and renovation, not reinvention. Reinvention to me suggests that you are throwing the baby out with the bathwater and starting again. I got it all wrong and I've got to start again. No. We need to pull the business apart and see which are the pieces that are actually great foundations. And let's just make some adjustments, because being in business is an evolution. It's not a revolution. So as we change, especially when we have a service-based business, then it's a reflection of us. And as we change and have more experiences, then naturally our business core will change, but recalibrate, not like reinvent. So a couple of examples. A woman that I've worked with over the last 3 years, actually, she runs a project management business, very successful business. But she wanted and was craving this deeper impact as well as increased revenue. I mean, we should earn good money, be well compensated for the value that we create. So we looked at the core of the business. And one of the things that I noticed immediately, because this is the lovely benefit of having a neurodiverse brain that does a lot of divergent thinking, I can look at the big picture very quickly, see the gaps, see the opportunities. It's I love it. It's what I sort of, eat for breakfast every day. And there's a concept called authority initiatives that I use in business. And this is a way of increasing your authority and your positioning so that you are seen as elevated. I need to talk to that person. They really know their stuff. So the example with this business was she was sponsoring project management conferences and events. And she was one of like half a dozen people, and that would give her 15 minutes on stage. And I saw this opportunity and said, why aren't we hosting them ourselves? Look at all of this. And she's like, ooh, can I? So there was a little bit of self-doubt there. But when we could show her what I call evidence of your fabulous file, which is all the things that you have done, and build from there, she's now run her own PMO, it's Project Management Office's events, twice in Melbourne, twice in Sydney. She's launching another one, and suddenly her authority has been elevated to hell because she's no longer one of the sponsors. She's the presenter.
Yeah.
So her business did not need reinventing. It needed recalibrating. And that's just one example of something that we've done with her. Her revenue has doubled in the last 3 years, not just because of that, because she's an awesome operator. Mm-hmm. But there is no doubt this positioning has made a big difference. Another example, I was in interstate in the last couple of weeks working with actually a woman who runs a neurodiversity-oriented business. And with her, it's a case of she has the business over here where she looks after parents and their kids and provides services, but she has a passion for teaching organizations through keynotes and workshops to make their workplaces more neurodiverse friendly. So I've renamed that part of her business the education arm of the business and bolted it in to her core business in such a way that it's an extension. We went through her services and we recalibrated them because she had too many. We made sure that she has what I call the fundamental four, which are where are the core top of mind problems, pains or aspirations that people have, and where are you shifting them to? And she didn't have that piece in there. And when we can really elevate and isolate those problems, we speak much more directly to the heart of the person that you're looking to support and serve. And then we talk about where we shift you to and how we facilitate those shifts. It sounds incredibly basic, but we lose sight of that. And she had a couple of services that she did not love. And when we really assessed them, it was like, they need to just pull the curtain down on those. And instead, let's ramp up this one and really wrap the core of your business around it. But again, it was a reinvention, a recalibration, not throwing out the whole business and starting again.
Right.
So it's really that ability, which I love. You can't see the spot that you're standing on. And so often a business owner, even when she has a team or staff, she doesn't always have a sounding board.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I adore. It's helping people see what they already have and then elevating it. So much fun.
Yeah, I've heard people say the corner office is the loneliest place in the world because you need somebody to talk to. You need to be able to bounce things. You need the perspectives.
And absolutely,
you can't get it for people who are working for you.
And we undervalue ourselves. Like one of the things we always do is a strengths profile and then look at the clusters of strength and how can we leverage those? Because you sort of know what you're good at, but you don't value it in the same way because quite often it just comes naturally.
Yeah. Well, it's nothing because I've always been like this, right?
Exactly. Oh, and everyone can do that, can't they? No. So when you've got that beautiful combination of what your strengths are, what your soapbox is, like what you really want to do in the world, and you overlay that with your services, your audience, all this big sort of picture and recalibrate it, that's what unlocks your next chapter. And that's when you have that contribution, fulfillment, and financial reward, because we deserve all three. So I love it. Obviously, I could talk for years about this because I just love it.
No, that is great. The undervaluing that happens with females is such a huge thing.
It is very much so.
I guess it's generational. Where does this come from, Angela, in your experience? I mean, why do we do this?
Oh my goodness, I've got so many thoughts as to why it happens. It's got so much to do with conditioning, so social conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And I could jump on my feminist soapbox and start ranting. My husband will be going, oh, here she goes again. But we have traditionally, if I think about the role models that were available to me as a Gen X woman,
mm-hmm.
I didn't have any of women that were running their own businesses. Like literally, at 50, because I turned 55 in a couple of days, at my age, my mum and her friends were not starting businesses. They were not recalibrating businesses. They were not doing those things. My mum had very few options open to her. There weren't examples around us of what those possibilities were. I get so excited for my daughter. I mean, there's some crap things that happens at this age group, in this generation with social media impacts, et cetera. But there are more possibilities. There are more role models. There are more examples of what could, your options of what you could do have expanded. If we look at the roles that women have more traditionally been in, I mean, we've got a report that came out today in Australia. There's a new gender disparity report, which looks at the gender pay gap and the percentage of people in leadership. It's now compulsory to report on this in organisations with 100 or more staff. No surprises that the gap is about 18%, which is significant. So women have traditionally been told that we have been shown that we will earn less. Mm-hmm. A lot of the traditional jobs that are in the more caring services, which apparently is our nature, are valued far lower. Like, you look at the teachers and all the different sorts of care roles, always valued lower. So even though we may not have overtly been told you are worth less, you must charge less, we've absorbed it.
Yeah.
It's in the atmosphere. It's in the water.
Yeah.
And it takes a conscious effort to actually own the value that you create, which is separate from your worth, very separate things. I see people get those two mixed up all the time. Your worth is absolutely unquestionable, just as this incredible But if you think about how our bodies operate, how our minds operate, all the things we've done in our life, we're freaking awesome. So our worth, unquestionable. The value that we create needs to be valued more highly. But yes, they are separate issues. So yeah, I'm a bit of a ranty one on that, but it will change, but we need to take the reins.
Absolutely. For all of our daughters. Absolutely. I totally understand. So good for Australia for what they're doing in terms of you must report if you have over 100 employees in your organization. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, name and shame you, goddammit.
We'll make this work no matter what. I have a quote here, which I think came from you, Angela, that says, a next chapter business is built on skinned knees.
Yeah.
And I love that, because what you've alluded to in terms of how we are changing, so does our business have to change, but we can't see the forest for the trees or the spot we're standing in, so to speak. Mm-hmm. How do you work with your clients, Angela? I mean, you're in Australia, so are they international clients? Can people, because right about now, I've got enough people that are jumping up and down probably out there in the big world saying, how do I reach her? How do I hire her? How do I get her in my life? But I don't live in Australia. So do you do a lot of virtual stuff?
Yeah, I do both. I mean, unashamedly, my first love is face-to-face connection. I mean, I'm an energy vampire in a good way. Like, I really love the energy of that dynamicism of being in the same room. However, that's not possible in lots of cases. Yes, yeah. I've got American clients right now. I've had English clients are a bit trickier because of the time difference.
Yeah.
I'm usually going to bed as they wake up, but we can usually juggle the American side. So what a typical engagement is, first and foremost, a conversation. We need to have a conversation so I can understand where you are, where you want to be. And because I work primarily with people that are in the service-based businesses, if someone has a product-based business, then I can make a recommendation to someone else. But I'm just not good at that. I need somebody who has a track record of some description of business. I don't start from scratch, because one of my genius points is pulling apart what exists to do that renovation. So we have the conversation first and foremost. There needs to be a match between us. There needs to be that feeling of connection and trust and possibility. That dynamic has to be there. I love working with people who are purposeful, you know, who have this desire to change. One of the conversations I had yesterday was with an amazing organizational psychologist who's been working with corporates for quite some time, but her own life circumstances have changed. She skinned her knees, and that has changed her perspective, and therefore she needs to recalibrate what she's taking to the world, because it no longer feels like a true reflection of what she believes and what she stands for. So that's like, just let me get my hands on that business. That's hugely fun. So if we find that there's a great match between us, then we do some assessments from there. Like, I do the strengths profiling, I use the Enneagram, I do values work, just so I can get that picture of who you are and what's important to you, because your business needs to serve you just as much as you serve your clients. Otherwise, it's unsustainable. You'll burn out, hate it, and it's all over, Red Rover. So we need to make sure that we reflect in that way. Then we move into a workshop. When I've got an overseas client, I usually chop the workshop into two pieces. Like, I'm working with a woman, I think she's in Texas, tomorrow. But you can't do 6 hours on Zoom. It's just like, it'll just burn your brain. So we do three, and then we go away, and then we come back and do another three. And that's when we're really looking at, you know, who's your audience and what's your message and what's your core services and what are your authority initiatives and et cetera, et cetera. So it depends on the situation with the person as to what we're going to cover. Then there's different iterations of that. Some people like to then continue with mentoring, and some people like to take the money and run. Okay, got the ideas, fantastic, off I go. So, it depends on the individual. But it's very much, I've got a blend of consulting, mentoring and coaching. So I ask questions, but I'm also not afraid to make recommendations, because in 20 years I've seen the insides of literally hundreds of businesses. So I don't believe in formulas, I believe in frameworks, but I also believe in not just, so what do you think you'd do about that? From a coaching perspective, I want to also make suggestions. So it's a real blend of the two. But people have got to take action, because Rome wasn't built in a day, and, you know, wishing is not going to change your business. You need to build up that courage to actually make the changes. And I am there. One of my other sayings is borrow my belief in you until you have it for yourself.
I love that.
I feel it really strongly. Yeah, it feels good. I think when I went back through a lot of my feedback on my website and I looked for what are the common denominators? What are people saying? And one of them was, you make me feel that I can. So that's the confidence piece. Because if you think you can or you can't, you know, you're halfway there.
Right.
And the other one is I'm quite direct and incisive, but then I hug you. So it's like it's always delivered with warmth. And that's, I think, is one of my really, the vibrancy and the warmth, I think, are two of my traits. That's the way I like to show up in the world because I'm an optimist and I love people and I love women's potential. And I've actually had a couple of clients because I also do retreats. I could take women away into the country because I grew up on a farm in New Zealand and there's something about being out in that wide open space. So I take them down to a place called the Southern Highlands in New South Wales. So having that big open space around you seems to expand possibilities and ideas. But I have had women come from England and from New Zealand who have flown over for retreats.
So that's marvelous.
There's always the possibility if you want to escape to Australia.
Absolutely. One of these days I will be there. I would love to experience that. Can we talk about your book? Did your book actually happen before you launched this business?
Oh, no, the book was a lockdown project.
It's a COVID project.
It's my COVID. I was hopeless at baking sourdough, so I went and wrote a book instead. I'm a, what's the word, a bibliograph, someone who just eats books. Like I've read since I was a little tiny, tiny person. And I remember hearing, I host dinners for businesswomen and we...
I've read about that. Another reason to travel to Australia.
That's so lovely. But there was a guest once that I had at a Melbourne dinner who said that she was an author coach and she said that books allow people to transform in private. And I went, drop the mic. That's so true. So true. And I'd often had clients say to me, you should write a book. It would be really good. But here's my own journey with self-doubt because I could say, yes, absolutely, it would be. And that's really safe. Because if I never actually write it, there's that perpetual potential. So it was a bit spooky. So the book, I actually was in a business mastermind myself because I believe, as I am now, in having support. It's really important. And in there was this beautiful book coach who is in Atlanta. And I worked with her. She helped me pull my ideas out and into a framework that could eventually turn into a book. So I would write and at 6 a.m. in the morning before anyone else got up with all those beautiful Australian birds singing to me and some caffeine alongside, and I would get my ideas down onto paper. I hand wrote because that connection with pen to paper, so there's something different about it. Then I would record it, I would speak it, so that it could be transcribed. And then that's what I turned into the chapters. That was my process. And I had and have within the book like a cycle that I see people go through when they are creating their next chapter. And it did start with discontent from just mild to like, I'm going to kill someone if I can't change things.
Yeah.
And then there's doubt, right? And we get stuck in this deliberation zone, like not happy but too scared to change, not happy but don't want to rock the boat, not happy but if you get stuck there, you will just disappear, right? Around and around and around.
Yeah, you just get lost in that maze. Yeah.
So you need to make a decision. You need to come across the threshold. You need to trust yourself, you know, get a new vision, get support, whatever, so that you can then design and deliver this next chapter, this next version of your business. So it was very much... I talk in a lot about self-worth because that's which has now really morphed into self-leadership for me, though self-worth is at the core. So it's sort of like a fusion of my own experience in terms of moving through self-doubt and actually backing myself to like strong business advice in terms of, you know, essential frameworks when you're building a business. The only thing that I find frustrating is that because I wrote it in 2020, things have changed. Like there's some things in the book that, because I'm in my own next chapter, which aren't as relevant any longer. Mm-hmm. Like I was building the Self-Worth Institute, which I'm not now, because I realized before I was diagnosed with ADHD that it was another bright, shiny option that I was chasing. But that's, you know, that I think in and of itself is a testament to the fact that we do evolve and change. So there's that acceptance with the way it was. But, oh my goodness, so proud when I got that book. That was a real bucket list thing to actually hold it in my hands, that, you know, your ideas made manifest and like, here it is in your hand. Beautiful cover design, beautiful layout. The woman I worked with who took care of that did such a beautiful job. And it's still a real buzz when someone buys a copy off my website and I, you know, sign it and post it off to them. It's a real buzz. You can also get it on Amazon. But I think a lesson here, though, for anyone listening is that we are so quick to, or maybe this is just me, so quick to achieve something and then go, right, next.
Yes.
I know that's a neurodiverse thing as well. But reverse gapping ourselves, instead of continually looking forward to where we haven't got yet, what we haven't achieved yet, we need to create a practice of pausing and looking back and looking at the gap from where we've been to where we are now. And I consciously have to remind myself to do that because I'm like future tripping, future tripping. And so I actually have copies of the book sitting here in my office, which are like, it's a touchstone for me. It's a touchstone. So, and I think that's one of the things that I do share with clients that I touched on before was your need for a fabulous file, like to actually
I love that term.
Yeah, got to keep evidence of those achievements, those goals, those, you know, cards from your kids. It could be all different sorts of things to remind yourself that you are very capable and have done glorious things. It doesn't matter that you haven't, you know, caused world peace or solved world hunger. It doesn't matter. Each of us is a link in the chain. We need to play our part or the chain, you know, is broken. So fabulous file. Everyone needs one.
I'm just going to do a call out for your book called Your Next Chapter, Ditch Your Doubt, Own Your Worth, and Build the Business You Really Want.
Yeah.
Angela, maybe it had to do with growing up in New Zealand. Your father was a sheep farmer, I think.
Yeah, well, he was a shearer and a fencer. So we only had a small farm, but he shore the sheep and he put up fences. So he was, you know, very much a labourer and was always down on himself. He left school at 14, big, big family, father died, had to leave, help. So he always considered himself less than.
Oh.
And I think some of that possibly rubbed off around the edges. My mum was studying, had to leave school early, was similar thing, was studying nursing, and then she met my dad and got pregnant, so I had to drop out.
Mm.
So again, that blunted potential and that frustration that was part of her story through life.
Undoubtedly has had an effect.
It have impacts, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely, because there's imprints that happen. I mean, obviously you know this, whether we're aware of it or not, but it gets into your soul. Angela, how would you describe bravery? What does bravery mean to you, just off the top of your head?
Bravery to me means pausing to explore that small voice inside of you, actually pausing to let it expand and see what it has to say, and then to trust it and to detach from what you've been told is the right or possible thing to do. So that step forward, just that first step forward in the direction that that little voice is encouraging, that is bravery. I don't care if you get to the destination or not, it's that step. That, to me, is the bravery piece.
That's a beautiful answer. Thank you. Thank you for that. Let's talk about how people could potentially get in touch with you, buy your book. You're also a speaker, aren't you, Angela? You present at conferences and do speeches. Maybe we should talk about that before we have the call out to how to connect with you.
It's probably a small part of my world now. I used to do a lot more speaking when I was running my marketing agency because that was one of the strategies by which you create demand and impact.
Yeah.
What I prefer, I'm not saying I wouldn't speak because I enjoy it, but I have discovered that I am far happier and more effective in a smaller environment and a more intimate setting. That's more the way I like to do it. So my presenting is more directed at those dinners that I do, you know, where I'm facilitating more than presenting, because I've learned as much from the person beside me as I have from the person in the front of the room when I've been at things. And so facilitating conversation and tapping into other people's ideas, not assuming that mine are the best ones, is what I'm most interested in. So I do present about your next chapter to groups, and I often do that to groups via Zoom. And I'm happy because I've got a whole philosophy about, you know, stepping into your next chapter. But it's not a big part of my world these days. A big part.
But your podcast is, but you've been on a bit of a hiatus, but hopefully those episodes will be forthcoming.
They'll be coming back again. There's, you know, if you visit my website now and look, there's like 143 episodes, something like that. And yeah, I took a sabbatical in 2022 to early 2023, because there was lots of personal stuff going on, lots of demands with my family, that mental health challenges that had literally worn me out. And I usually keep going, but I, you know, I walked my talk and I recognized that I needed to step back for a while and take care of me so I could do a better job of taking care of others. It's the classic oxygen mask, but I actually did it. And I acknowledge the privilege that I have, the extreme privilege to have been able to do that, because I'm in a strong and stable relationship, et cetera. But that was transformational. That's when I got the diagnosis. That's when I worked with a narrative psychologist and really unpacked more of my past and contextualized it. I worked with a naturopath. I had a breast reduction. It's like, that was life-changing.
Wow.
So all of these things. And I came back with a renewed sense of purpose, but a renewed sense of energy, which, you know, my clients and my family are benefiting from for sure.
It's a wonderful thing to actually listen to yourself sometimes when you're teaching the next chapter and taking a pause and stepping away. But one thing to say it, another thing to do it when it comes to you. So, Angela, maybe this is kind of a trite question, but what's your next chapter? Do you know what direction or things, some stuff that you're maybe hoping for down the road?
Well, my own recalibration into my next chapter literally has been happening only in the last couple of months. It's very much a nuanced change, as in my recognizing at what point I do my best work and cutting away other services that don't allow me to do my best work, to be of higher service. So at the moment, it's very simple. It's business as usual in this new packaging of me, which is being very clear of working with, you know, people who have an existing established business and who are looking for that greater impact. And in the way that I work with the workshop scenario and the mentoring, where I used to do lots of other stuff as well in different formats, but it's like streamlining my own way of working. In terms of where that's going to take me, I haven't looked further than let's get this recipe feeling good for me and working well for my clients. And then I may extend out what that vision looks like. But right now it's quite tactical in terms of getting the podcast started again, updating the book, managing a certain level of clients, making sure my dinners are full. So it's really doubling down on what I do best. And then we'll see what happens after that.
Love that. So how can people find you, reach you, connect with you, follow you, all of those wonderful things, and buy your book?
So easy. Like, my website is just my name, which is a weird name, so I will spell it for you. So it's Angela Raspis, which is R-A-S for Sydney, P for Patrick, A-S-S for Sydney, .com.au, or on LinkedIn. I'm Angela Raspis everywhere. There is no other Angela Raspis in the whole world, so it's pretty easy to find me. The legend was that, because I married that name, that it used to be Raspassé and they were French, and then they moved to England and wanted to sound less French, so they just made it into Raspis. Well, they didn't exactly look very British with that name. So, yeah, there's very few of us. So it's hard to pronounce, easy to find. So on my website and LinkedIn and Instagram are the places where I typically play. And you can find the book there. And there's a great resource. I'm working on another one as well, but there's a great resource on the website. You'll see it under resources. It's called the Recalibration Toolkit. And it has some really great exercises that take a bit of effort. This is not a two-page checklist type resource. It's about 18 pages actually. But there's things to take yourself through to get really clear on what is the next step, getting clear on what you're doing now and what revenue you're generating from where, and ways of identifying new opportunities and evaluating those. So really important pre-work to do if you're feeling not happy, Jan, to use that expression, and wanting to open a next chapter, you've got to do the groundwork first. And so that resource, which is freely available, I think is a really useful place to start. And then, yes, you can grab the book, you can send me an email, you can do all the things. And, I have an absolute love for connecting with people and hearing where they're at, where they want to be, and to see whether or not we can close those two points for them when we work together.
I'm going to go and use that resource myself.
Yay. Let me know if it's helpful.
I absolutely, absolutely will. I have, this is not said by you, this is said by Albert Einstein, but as we wrap it up, it just seems like something that makes sense. Everybody is a genius. But if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing that it is stupid. Ooh. It sort of just wraps up everything that we've just been talking about for the last hour or so.
It really does.
Angela, I hope we have the chance to meet in person one of these days.
That would be a delight.
Is there anything you'd like to say before we close that maybe you were hoping I'd ask you about and I didn't cover it? Because here we are.
I think we have had the most beautifully well-rounded conversation. And I appreciate that I'm a verbal processor. So I think as I talk, which sometimes means I talk a lot. But the way in which you've allowed me that space to express and the questions that you've asked have been a real joy and a privilege to be able to do that, and just the invitation onto your podcast in general, because I know as a fellow podcaster the work that goes into creating this sort of resource for your listeners. But really my only desire is that for someone listening to this, whether or not they get in touch with me, it doesn't matter. What's important is that if they feel a shift inside of themselves, if this has sparked something in them, this feeling of, there is something more. I don't have to reinvent. I can just recalibrate. I can open another doorway and step through. Please do so. We need to back ourselves. And if we're not, inverted commas, succeeding, we're learning. Everything is feedback. Everything is feedback. And I guess the other part would be, don't do it alone. Mm. Whether you speak to us or whether you find your own belief buddy, someone else who is on a similar journey, so they understand the challenges and the joys that are in this self-directed employment, how we call it, because it has both. It has incredible challenges. A couple of days ago, I was ready to throw it all out the window. And then the next morning, I realized that was temporary emotional dysregulation. And I got back on the horse again. But if I didn't have someone to talk to and to be with about that, I think that's why a lot of businesses fall off cliffs, because we try and do it alone. And we were not designed to do life alone. We're just not.
Thank you so much, Angela. Please stay in touch. Thank you so much for being on Breaking Brave. And thank you for everything you're doing for all the women that you're working with and for all the women who are listening to this who've just had some form of a breakthrough.
Well, you've just given me a lovely boost for the day as well. That feeling of warmth and appreciation is going to power me through the afternoon. So thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. For updates between episodes, I'd encourage you to join my mailing list, which you can do at either marilynbarefoot.com or breakingbrave.show. At most once a month, at least once a quarter, you'll receive an update on the latest resources, topics, and information I've found either super helpful or amazingly impactful. That's it for now. See you next time.